Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. I'm Chris Brown. I'm a partner in Burgess Salmon's Pensions and Lifetime Savings team. And I'm really pleased to be joined today by Fionn Hughes from Willis Towers Watson and Andy Prater, who is a director in the Burgess Salmon Pensions team. And we're going to be looking at issues facing small pension schemes. So, Fionn, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Chris. As Chris said, I'm Fionn Hughes from WTW and I'm head of our integrated bundled service, 1DB. For those not familiar with 1DB, it's an integrated advisor and provider solution for DB schemes, giving trustees and members access to our breadth and wealth of knowledge, expertise and technology from across all of WTW to provide a modern and transparent service centred around the member experience.
Super, sounds great. I'm looking forward to discussing what you're seeing and how that approach can help small schemes. So brilliant to have you on the pod. And Andy, great to have you on the pod too. Do you want to say a bit about who you are and what you do, please?
Thank you, Chris. Yes, my name's Andy Prater. I'm a director in Burgess Salmon's Pensions and Lifetime Savings team. I advise both pension scheme trustees and employers across a broad range of pensions issues and in relation to both defined benefits and defined contribution arrangements, with scheme asset sizes ranging from the low millions up to over £1 billion. And Chris, if I may start by saying, I really enjoyed my last appearance on the pod way back in season two. So thank you for eventually inviting me back on.
Yes, brilliant. Season six, and looking forward to having you on the next episode so that comment doesn't happen again. Thanks, Andy, for that. Okay, so without further ado, let's talk about small schemes. Okay, so Fionn, perhaps the first question to you, please. What is the definition of a small scheme?
So, schemes under £100 million worth of assets is how the regulator defines it, and that's the terminology we tend to adopt as well. And I think, just to add, whereas our client range goes right down to, schemes that the way below the £100 million marker as well, and that's certainly where we've seen a growth area this year, and it's why conversation today is so topical.
Yeah, absolutely. As Andy says, our client base does the same. Okay, so I suppose first question is, what particular challenges do those schemes smaller than £100 million in assets, what challenges do they face as opposed to challenges facing the DB universe in general?
The challenges they face are around probably having tighter budget, probably having less internal resource to be able to support with pension scheme matters. And they might feel as well, sometimes certainly what we've heard is that they maybe have less provider choice. So they kind of don't have that, perhaps access to all of the market. And so that's where we then see, particularly for those smaller schemes, I think they can feel quite pushed to be kind of less important than some of the bigger schemes, and therefore their member experience either suffers more and or they can't progress with some of those projects. So that kind of administration and member experience is certainly that top answer. I think then again, sort of mentioning those projects there, again, they're the same things that the bigger schemes all suffer and have to deal with. But then I think, you've got the other range of areas. So, still the challenges around, transacting, again, which are kind of more acute, perhaps, or certainly perceived to be more acute, the smaller the schemes are. Covenants, different challenges with different size employers. That doesn't necessarily tie back to the size of the scheme, but again, I guess that there may be some, businesses in different scenarios sponsoring these schemes. So again, I think, going back to what I said initially, overall, at the level, they are the same issues, but I think it's as you kind of delve into them that the problems and how to solve those problems are slightly different.
Yeah. So same issues, but the response of a small scheme to XYZ issue will be different to one that is, 500 million plus, a billion or whatever else. Andy, you were recently involved with an event with some of Fionn's colleagues from Willis Towers Watson, hosted in Bristol, although I know there's other ones going on around the country. What are your reflections there on the sorts of challenges facing small schemes?
It was a real pleasure to host WTW's Small But Mighty event in Bristol with Fiona's colleagues earlier in the summer. I think we did have some really interesting discussions on topical issues, issues affecting smaller schemes, horizon gazing generally, and end game planning. I think I would agree with everything Fionn just said, really. But just to add from a legal perspective, I think I'd say, you know, as Fionn did, everything that affects larger schemes can be more challenging for smaller schemes with fewer resources. But from my perspective, I think keeping up with a quickly evolving regulatory landscape can be challenging for smaller schemes.
Yes.
We never seem to be too far away from the next pensions or finance bill, or there's a new consultation or some new piece of regulatory guidance. So that I think can be difficult. And I think one topical thing which came up in the summer and which is still relevant now is that whilst the government's going to legislate to ease the burden in relation to Section 37 compliance following the Virgin Media decision, we're still expecting the Verity Trustees and Wood judgments later this year, which will be relevant for many schemes in this respect. So there's still going to be another legal exercise to work through to ensure compliance there. So that's a couple of thoughts to add, yeah, from a legal perspective.
Yeah, and that Section 37 is interesting, isn't it? Because although there's a fix in the legislation, I think the industry and the actuarial industry is still, you know, working through the approach to applying that fix. So yes, schemes will have a lot to think through with lawyers and with their actuaries as the fix is settled, even leaving aside Verity Trustees on there. Okay, so lots of issues facing small schemes, similar to schemes of all sizes, to costs, admin issues, future regulation, transaction readiness, we've already mentioned, potentially also a different approach to investment. And Fionn, you mentioned sponsor covenant, and we've talked about governance in response to challenges as well. Let's focus, see where the conversation takes us, but focus on, Fionn, you started by talking about administration and that member experience and sort of the day-to-day. What are you seeing in that market?
Yeah, so, and I think that's a really good question. You know, from what the schemes and the trustees and sponsors that we've spoken to, you know, like challenges that I mentioned before, you know, maintaining a good level of member service whilst also being able to address the projects. Because, you know, when everybody knows when administration isn't going well and members aren't, you know, receiving good service, then it takes a lot of time and energy from everybody involved to improve that. And that time is then detracting from, you know, some of the project work that's either required from a regulatory requirement, or that's desired to help you and the scheme, you know, progress with their journey and really make a difference to, you know, ultimately reaching that ending. And in response to the second part of the question as to what are we doing about it, you know, I'm really proud to sit here today and say, you know, we're investing in the administration services that we provide, and we have been doing for a number of years.
So how should trustees and sponsors approach, you know, thinking about different service providers?
There's no getting away from the fact the thought of changing administrators, you know, it is daunting. It's a big project and a big piece of work. But I think, you know, with anything like that, if you go into it with your eyes open in terms of what the process is going to look like, and actually, you know, think about what you can gain from going through that process. You know, there's a lot of opportunity to be had by going through an administration transition. You know, it's not just about, you know, what, you know, a big part of it is about, you know, what the member experience will look like at the other side of the transition. But going through that process is an opportunity to really, you know, get into the weeds of the benefit specifications, you know, administration practices, understanding the data. And for me, kind of the success of the future is all underpinned by having that transparency and knowledge and a plan, you know, and I think that's really important. If you know everything about the scheme, whether that's potentially any limitations or any, you know, any issues in the data or benefits that are being paid, once you know that, you can find a way of tackling it. You don't have to do it all at once. And some of those things will be resolved as going through paths for transition. And I think once you know where you stand, then, you know, you're much better equipped for the future.
And Chris, I think from my perspective, again, I agree with all of that. And I think, you know, whilst recognising that it's likely to be a challenging exercise, I would say to trustees, take a step back and think about fiduciary duties as well. So, you know, as you'll know, they will include but aren't limited to promoting the proper purposes of the trust, administering the scheme correctly, acting prudently and responsibly, and acting in the best interests of beneficiaries. So for all of those reasons, at least, and more, it may well be appropriate to look to change your administrator if there are good reasons to do so.
Yeah. And our approach as well, I mean, one of the things that we kind of differentiate ourselves on when doing an administration transition, so typically people are also transitioning scheme actuary services. And actually, we don't tend to look at it as transitioning administration and transitioning actuarial. You know, you're transitioning the data and the strategy, and it's looking at it, you know, both kind of combined, and everybody is involved in that process, which again, you know, delivers much more value in the future.
Yeah. And from a legal perspective, when trustees move their service providers, we often get involved with looking at those service provider contracts. And certainly recently I've been involved with looking at the transition periods, the handover periods between administrators, and how that works, and what the outgoing administrator's duties are, and how that crosses over, and liability split, particularly during the transition period as well. So trustees will want to speak with their new administrators about how that will work. So you mentioned there 1DB, Fionn, and how that's a package solution with actuarial support as well, and can see the benefits of that, and also investment support as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So we can provide kind of all the services, all the service lines, or just a couple of the service lines.
Okay. Yeah. And why the I suppose just thinking of trustees. You know, I can see the benefit of having all of those services from the same provider. Are there any reasons why trustees might think, look, that, you know, that this option's not right for us, or perhaps things that trustees need to think through before they decide that it is right for them?
Yeah, so I think on the one hand, there is, you know, the approach of wanting best in class. And obviously, you know, I would say we are best in class in all of those areas.
Yes, exactly.
But also, I think when it comes to changing providers, then, you know, understandably, there is a reservation or concern around loss of knowledge. And so I think, yeah, again, it's kind of balancing the risks for each scheme to what's right for them.
And so I want to pick on a point that you mentioned a little bit earlier, Fionn, and you were saying how thinking about your administration and getting that, you know, getting your house in order on administration, maybe by swapping providers, helps generally, but also helps you prepare for potential endgame solutions and risk transfer transactions. So I wondered if you could unpack that a bit for us. And then Andy, I might come to you to see what you're seeing issues cropping up for risk transfer transactions for small schemes in particular. So Fionn, I'll come to you first, if that's okay, about the benefits of what you're seeing and getting your administration and on your house in order in advance of a risk transfer transaction.
Quite often we see through a number of the transitions that we've done that we're moving from schemes are moving from a manual process to, you know, getting their data, you know, fully functional on an electronic database and having all of the individual data items that you need to be able to administer those benefits. And I guess you need less data to administer a scheme because you can do additional steps in coming up with quotations, etc. But if for transacting, you obviously need all of those individual items. So again, it kind of comes back to, if you understand what you've got in terms of data, and what you haven't got, you can come up with a data plan to address any issues that there might be. And you can do that, the scheme can then do that at the pace that's right for them. And I think quite often, you know, some of the things I've heard anecdotally are, you know, when schemes dip in and out of fixing kind of isolated data issues, either that can cost more in the long run because you're kind of going in repeatedly, potentially to look at member records. But also it can, you know, you can come a bit unstuck at the point of actually wanting to transact because there's more work potentially there to be done than you realise. So I think from the data perspective, then you've also got the benefits side of things. And Andy, you mentioned before, you know, the benefit specification. And I know you've done a podcast previously in one of your earlier series around, you know, benefit specifications and the importance of that role in the future journey of the scheme. And again, it's about kind of identifying and, having that insight into what the benefits of the scheme are and if there are any areas of uncertainty, because again, it's those areas of uncertainty that will ultimately impact on cost, which is not where you want to be, both cost in terms of securing the benefits and timelines. You know, and if timelines stretch out, then that's cost, that's additional cost for the sponsor. Yeah. So, again, kind of for me, the big word is transparency and knowledge.
Yeah, thanks, Pia. And that chimes, and certainly we see the benefits of trustees getting ready in advance. So we'll be involved with preparing benefit specifications for a risk transfer transaction, and certainly getting your ducks in a row, which is as I think was a phrase we used on that that earlier podcast episode, can really help schemes so that they are transaction ready. And Andy, what are you seeing at the moment in terms of small schemes approaching those transactions?
Yeah, I think generally, Chris, as Fionn sort of said before, we really would encourage all schemes to carry out a benefit specification review early, even if a transaction may be some way off, because if there are issues to work through, it's better to find out about them early. It may be, for example, that an action could be taken against relevant advisors, but more generally, there's space to seek to resolve issues without the pressure of an impending transaction.
Yeah, exactly. It's better to know if there is something there, isn't it?
Just picking up on something you said there, Andy, something that's certainly a question that I've heard before, is it ever too early to get ready for a transition? And certainly from my benefit and experience, of talking with various people across the industry, I think as long as everything is documented, uh-huh, knowing kind of what that end purpose is, then that's going to put you in then any work that's done is really useful. I don't know if that's...
I think that's a really good point. I mean, I think it probably comes onto a little bit the scope of what our work would be generally and when looking at benefit specifications. I think it's a related point. And I think approaches can vary, but typically we would expect to start looking at the scheme's most recent consolidated trust deed and rules as amended. And then we would then see which members those rules don't apply to. So typically members who became deferred or pensioner members before those rules came into force. And then we would compare that against administration practice for those members. So the process in creating the benefit specification originally would be iterative, and it will differ between schemes depending on the circumstances. Mm. But it may well not be necessary to trace back the entire history of a scheme's governing documents when preparing a benefit specification. So I think you're right. There's almost, I don't see it as being a question of doing something too early, because you can get something prepared. And then if the scheme is amended subsequently, it's a relatively easy job to just tweak the benefit specification that you've got on file at that point.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that trustees speak with their advisors to really understand the scope of the job that they're agreeing with their service providers to do. I mean, on an earlier podcast episode in this series, I discussed with Andy, our colleagues, Richard Pettit and Eleanor O'Leary, both in the Pensions and Lifetime Savings team here at Burgess Salmon, about benefit audits. And on that episode, we discussed, you know, the extent to which trustees needs to, well, there is no duty on trustees to pick up every stone and go looking for problems. And so I think trustees need to agree with their advisors the extent and scope of the work they do when they are doing a review, a benefit review, or when they are looking at a benefit specification. Right. So I want to talk about something slightly different now. I want to finish by having a quick look at what you two are both seeing in terms of preparing for a risk transfer solution, and what you're seeing as to how small schemes in particular face a risk transfer project.
Well, Chris, I think whilst I understand this year's on track to be a record year for the bulk annuity market, I think there have perhaps been fewer really big transactions. So that's meant that some insurers who typically focus on on the larger schemes have been stepping down to do smaller deals. Mm-hmm. So I think the market is more competitive for small sub £100 million schemes at the moment. I think generally, you know, when trustees are thinking about securing benefits, typically price and the price lock mechanism are often sort of the number one criteria, probably most closely followed now by insurer administration capability. Yeah. And then I think probably contractual terms at number three. So whilst it's often been the case or is often stated that there's no room for negotiation in those terms, I think, you know, that's not necessarily the case. And I think now's a good time to be in the market for schemes of that size, and that there's potentially more negotiating scope.
Yeah, that's interesting. But also, I think even if an insurer does offer standard terms, it's very important for trustees to fully understand what they're signing up to.
And of course, Fionn, Burgess Salmon work with some of your colleagues at Willis Towers Watson. We've done that for a number of years now on a streamlined buy-in proposition. So what that means is, you know, we know those standard terms inside out. We know how to discuss them with insurers. So that's a real benefit to all schemes, but particularly those that are under 100 million.
Yeah, absolutely.
And two things I just wanted to add that I've seen in my recent experience of risk transfer solutions for sub £100 million schemes. One is, I suppose a number of years back, traditionally there would be an aim to ask the insurer to ensure the precise benefit specification in a scheme's deed and rules, whereas now there is much more of a trend the employer and trustee are perhaps harmonising, you know, minor ancillary benefits upwards to match an insurer's proposal and to take advantage of attractive pricing and to see a deal through. So that's a slight change in approach. And also, I think across the team, we've seen transactions where trustees have bought in knowing that the benefits bought in are an imperfect match to the benefits in the scheme, but that they help insure a lot of the liabilities and they know that they will deal with any difference in a data cleanse phase and pre-buyout.
So my main message to your listeners would be, you've got options. If you feel that something isn't right, something isn't going how you want it to be in your pension scheme and you want it to improve, you've got options. You know, the market is there, we are investing, and we've won over 10 new schemes this year alone. And I think that demonstrates that, you know, there is commitment there in the market to providing members with a really good service. So yeah, kind of don't sit there thinking that there's no options, and now's the time to do something about it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the pension for a member who happens to be in a scheme that is under £100 million is just as important as the pension for a member who's in a scheme that happens to be over £1 billion. So yeah, absolutely, there are options to provide the best for your membership.
Thanks, Chris. I mean, I think lots of trustees of smaller schemes probably feel like they're often firefighting lots of different problems or issues or regulatory developments. But I think notwithstanding that, I would say probably do your best to prepare early for projects. So again, this comes down to probably ensuring that you've got an accurate record of the benefits, do that benefit specification, and then that gives you, it should stand you in good stead to see where you are going forwards in relation to the future life cycle of the scheme.
Yeah, super. I think that's a really good message and that makes sense to me. Well, it was lovely to have Fionn and Andy on the pod. And I suppose I should say that there's lots of different issues affecting small schemes that we didn't get a chance to cover. So there's more we could discuss around increasing governance burden, the government's drive for consolidation, investment. Small schemes will have a different approach to surplus, might be harder to justify running on. But we hope that was a really helpful discussion about administration challenges and ways that smaller schemes might approach transactions. So that was another episode of the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. If you'd like to know more about our pensions and lifetime savings team and how our experts can work with you, then you can contact myself, Chris Brown, or Andy, or any of our team via our website. And as we say every episode, All of our previous episodes are available on Apple, Spotify, our website, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, and thanks for listening.